Today we're going to continue our series. We've been going through the summer on the superheroes of the Bible, and this has really been an exciting series. And I just want to begin by saying, turn in your Bibles too, and today we're going to be in the book of Daniel, chapter 6. Remember that a superhero in the Bible is an ordinary person that God uses in an ordinary person God uses in an extraordinary way. And so we're going to read about one of those characters. His name is Daniel in Daniel chapter 6. But you know, one of the things that we do when we get to the book of Daniel that's really kind of confusing with the rest of the Bible is that most of the time in the Bible, the location of the story is in the land of Israel. But when we come to this story, we're in a totally different location. And I thought about that florist who made a mistake one time sending flowers to the wrong location. He had sent out two bouquets of flowers, and one of them, with a note attached, went to the funeral home. And then the other one went to a man who was starting a new business in a new location in town. And he found out that he had gotten them mixed up and the notes mixed up because the next day, the guy with the new business in the new part of town came in, and he was very angry. He said, "For my new business, I got a bouquet of flowers and a note that read, 'Rest in peace.'" And the florist said, "You think that's bad? The guy who, what about the other guy who got the note that said, 'Good luck on your new location?'" So I just was thinking about that. The book of Daniel and the character of Daniel is sort of like you could write over his whole life, "Good luck on your new location." Because if you know Daniel, you know that his home was Israel, but it was ransacked by the Babylonians, and he was taken as a captive to Babylon. Good luck on your new location. While he was in Babylon, God blessed him in such extraordinary ways that he interpreted dreams, and the king said, "You know what? We're going to put you in charge." And now he was in a new position and a new location. But in this story today, we're going to find out a group of people that want to put him in another new location, in a den of lions. And we call this story in the Bible, Daniel Spent a Night in the Lion's Den. And I want us to read the story beginning in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 6. "It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom." Now, I should point out to you that the name Darius could refer to the Persian king. We're just not 100% sure exactly which Darius that was. And these satraps are these sort of local rulers that will run the kingdom. It's this vast, vast kingdom. In fact, go back to that image. We can show you an image of the kingdom of Daniel's day. This was the Persian kingdom. I mean, it was vast. It was almost the whole ancient world, inhabited world. And so this kingdom was, all of it was spread up by these 120 satraps. And then we go to verse 2. If you want to go back to the text, "And he put in three administrators over them." One of the administrators, I mean, one of the most important, influential people in the whole kingdom was Daniel, this Jewish captive. So the whole kingdom was being run by these, really over these three individuals, and Daniel was one of them. "The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king actually planned to put him over the whole kingdom." This is a really incredible part of this story. He was about to make Daniel in charge of everything. "And at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they weren't able to do so. The FBI couldn't find anything on Daniel. They could find no corruption in him. He was trustworthy, neither corrupt nor negligent. And finally, these men said, 'We'll never find any basis for any charge against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God.' So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king with a little plan, with a little plot, with a little lie. And they said, 'May King Darius live forever.'" You know, you always know you're being, you know, warmed up to with that one. "The royal administrators and the prefects and the satraps and the advisors and the governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict." That ain't true, because they didn't include Daniel, the most important person. "And enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or any human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. So you see what he's saying? You've got to pray to no one else but the king. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. Not even the king himself could break that law. So King Darius put the decree into writing. Now, I want us, as we go through the story today, just to kind of stop and notice what we discover here. And first of all, if you've got your outline you want to follow along, I want you to notice here, first of all, the plot against Daniel. The plot against Daniel. They would hash a plot against Daniel because, quite frankly, they envied him, right? I mean, they weren't trying to get Daniel thrown into a lion's den because he wasn't a good ruler or a good leader. They were jealous of the position that he had made himself into. And out of their envy and jealousy, they're going to plot to put him in a lion's den. So I just want us to think about this for a second. What's the big deal about envy? You know, in life, I mean, the truth is probably a lot of us deal with jealousy and envy. You know, maybe we don't really stop and kind of think about, maybe that's not something we should do. Maybe that's something we ought to kind of think about. What's the big deal about envy? Well, one of the interesting things in the Bible is it doesn't just tell us that envy is something we shouldn't do. It shows it to us. One of the things the Bible shows us is that envy, unchecked, is dangerous. One of the first kind of tragedies of the Bible is the story of Cain killing his brother Abel. But when you look back on that story, you realize that the story, you could just write over it, was all about envy. In Genesis, it tells the story. It says, and Abel brought an offering, remember that? Some fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. But the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering. But on Cain and his offering, he didn't look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. And the Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what's right, will you not be accepted? If you do not do what is right, this is what he says. Sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out in the field. And while they're in the field, Cain attacked his brother and he killed him. That image of sin is crouching at your door kind of fits with this story, like a lion crouching in the jungle, right? The ready to pounce on its prey. This whole story is all about that. That envy in our lives is like a lion waiting to attack and destroy us. Waiting to kill us. You know, people say, why did Cain kill his brother? You know, the old joke is, it's because he wasn't able. That's a joke. It's not very funny. But the real reason was, is because he was really just jealous. He was really just envious. There's a story in the book of Acts about Paul and a whole riot that broke out in Acts 17:5, that says, Jews were jealous of Paul, so they rounded up a bunch of bad characters in the market, and they formed a mob, and they rioted in the city. I mean, the Bible doesn't tell us envy's bad, jealousy's bad. It shows us that it's actually dangerous. But there's something even like maybe even more dangerous about it. And that is that envy is like one of those things you can't actually see because it's on the inside. And that's one of the things the Bible also shows us, is that envy eats us from the inside out. The book of Proverbs, it uses the imagery of rotting something. And in Proverbs 14:30, it says, a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. When I was a kid, we used to go out in the woods. And we would go out in the woods and we would find these big sticks and we would try to be, we did Star Wars when we were kids. And we would fight with the big sticks. And every once in a while, you'd go and you'd find one of these sticks. You'd think, man, I got this great Star Wars lightsaber. And you'd go to hit your friend or hit his stick with it and it would just fall to pieces. Because that piece of wood had been sitting there on the ground and it had been rotting. On the inside, you couldn't tell it on the outside, but because it was happening on the inside, but when you picked it up, it just broke into pieces. And the Bible says this, it says that a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Your bones are your skeletal system. They're the structure of your life. But what envy does is it begins to eat away at the structure of your life. It begins to take away your life's purpose and direction and strength. And when difficult moments come, you won't have the strength to endure them. Thomas Fuller once said that envy shoots at others, but it wounds herself. Pride is its cousin, isn't it? Proverbs said that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. But here's maybe something else to say about envy, is that envy, like, it only thinks about right now. You know, you're envious of someone, you're jealous of someone, you're thinking about, like, right now. And so the third thing to say about it is that envy is short-sighted. A person looks at another person and they say, man, I wish I had their whatever, their position, their possession. I wish I had their power, their influence, their fame. But that's so short-sighted, isn't it? Because we don't know all the things that they're going to go through, all the things that they're going to experience. We don't really know what's going on in their life. The psalmist says this in Psalm 49, do not be overawed when others grow rich. He could have said anything else, powerful, important, famous. When the splendor of their house increases, he says, because they're not going to take it with them when they die. In other words, don't just think about the right now of life. Think about the big picture of life. And so many times with envy, the big deal is it's short-sighted and it's destructive. And it destroys us on the inside out. And we can just see these powerful men in this Babylonian Persian kingdom. And they're eaten up with envy. It doesn't matter that they're in this great position. They want Daniel's position. But in the end, the lion is crouching for them. And we see what happens next in verse 10 of Daniel chapter 6. Let's look there. Daniel chapter 6, verse 10. The story continues. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, when he learned that that decree that said, you can't pray, was published, he went home to his upstairs room where his windows were open toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to God just as he had done before. In other words, he didn't break a stride. Then these men went as a group. The Hebrew here means something like a conspiracy. These men went as a group, and they found Daniel praying and asking God for help. And they went to the king, and they spoke to him about his royal decree. Didn't you publish a decree that, you know, during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to God or a human being except you, your majesty, would be thrown into a lion's den? The king, of course, said, yeah, it's in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians. It cannot be repealed. And then they said to the king, Daniel. Now this is the Daniel he's about to put in charge of the whole kingdom. This is the Daniel who's his most trusted advisor. Daniel, who's one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed, not because he was breaking his law, but look why. He was determined to rescue Daniel, and he made every effort until sundown to save him. And then the men went as a group to King Darius, and they said to him, remember, your majesty, according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issued can be changed. You got to put Daniel, even Daniel, you've got to put in the lion's den. This moment goes to me from plot to persecution. And so I call this second sort of scene here the persecution of Daniel. And it's all because of why? Yeah, it's all because of envy. And it's all because he prayed to God, you know? It's all because they're envious of him, and he's just staying true to his faith, true to his convictions, true to his belief. One thing you could write over Daniel's life was that he just prayed, you know, three times a day. Daniel made prayer a priority in his life. And he stands out in the Bible as one of those really great men, one of those superheroes of the Bible, because he was a person of prayer. Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians that we ought to pray continually. I've never interpreted that literally. I've never thought that you should just like pray all the time. Like you're driving down the road and going, I know I should be staring at the road, but I think I should be praying with my eyes closed. You know, I don't interpret that literally. What I think it means is that prayer should be a part of our life. And for Daniel, it was three times a day. For Jesus, one time in Luke chapter 6, verse 12, it says, one of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray, and he spent the night praying. When's the last time you spent the night praying? When's the last time you made prayer such a priority in your life? Morning, lunch, evening, that prayer was just a priority to you. Daniel didn't just pray out of the convenience or the habit of life. He prayed in this moment as he faced opposition, secondly. Even though he was told he couldn't do it, he still did it because it was a part of who he was. It was more important to him even than his life was his God. There's a lesson I think we learn here. If you decide to pray, I mean really, you decide to become a person of prayer, you will have to overcome obstacles, and you could put on there, and distractions. Because the phone's going to ring, the text message is going to come across, something really cool is going to be going on Facebook. I mean, there's just something awesome happening in the world of social media. Something's going to happen. The moment you say, I'm going to pray, something's going to happen, and it's going to question whether or not you're going to keep that commitment to pray. But when you do that, think about Daniel as he faced out toward Jerusalem, and three times a day he prayed. And then this is what happened. Look at verses 16 through 21. So the king gave the order. You got to think that this was the hardest order that Darius ever gave. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel, and they threw him into the lion's den. I often wonder what that looked like. Were they rough on him? Was the king saying, hey, take it easy on him? The king said to Daniel, the king's like, he's right there. He says, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. What a moment. And a stone was brought, and it was placed over the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. And the king returned to his palace, and he spent the night without eating. That's a big deal for a king. He spent the night without any entertainment. He didn't watch any television all night long. And he could not sleep. Verse 19, at the first light of the dawn. I mean, how many times in the Bible do we see that moment happening? Dawn. The king got up and he hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice. Can't you just hear it in his voice? Daniel, servant of the living God. Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? And Daniel answered. You got to think that's one of the great verses of the Bible. Daniel answered. May the king live forever. What a moment, right? What a moment. What do we learn from this moment? It's the third thing here. I'd call this the protection of Daniel. And I'd say it's for this reason. God is the lion king, right? God is the king of the lion. God is the king of your lion. God is the king of your den. God is the king of your circumstances. God is the king of your fears. God is the king of your circumstances. This night, Daniel would spend with the lions. He spent a night in the lion's den. You know, sometimes I think in life, God, why do you put us in the lion's den? You know, what we want to do is we want to avoid every lion's den of life. But sometimes it's God's will for us to be in the lion's den, and you might be in one right now. And you may not understand, like, God, why am I here? Why am I in this situation? Not understanding that that was a part of God's plan, because God didn't put Daniel in the lion's den to teach Daniel a lesson. God put Daniel in the lion's den to teach the king a lesson about who the real God was. I mean, this whole moment was orchestrated so the kingdom would know who this God is. I love the painter of the late 1800s, who painted Daniel with the lions. If you've seen this painting, you need to know a couple things about it. One is, he's 80 years old. A lot of times we think of Daniel as a kid. He's 80 years old. And which direction is he facing? Is he facing the lions? Is he facing the Lord? I love this moment. I love this painting because it says, look, when Daniel was in the lion's den, he wasn't looking at the lions. He was looking at the Lord. He was looking at the lion king. He was looking at the Lord of lords and the King of kings. That's where his attention was directed. David said in the Psalms, Psalm 91, verse 1, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. You live your life close to God, that doesn't mean you won't face a lion's den. It just means that when you're there, he's right there with you. Daniel spent a night in the lion's den. Number two, Daniel was unharmed the next day. And here's a lesson. I think it's one of the hardest, but one of the greatest lessons from the Bible. One of the greatest lessons from Daniel is this. You and I today, right now, are better off in the lion's den with God than in the king's palace without him. Like right now, you and I are better off in the lion's den with God than with everything else. The safest place for Daniel was never to be in the palace. It was always to be in prayer. It was never with the king of Babylon or Persia. It was with the king of kings. Paul wrote in 1 Timothy about this king. He said, God will bring about in his own time, 1 Timothy 6:15, the blessed and the only ruler, the King of kings and the Lord of lords. Revelation has that scene where Jesus is kind of like riding on a horse. And it says in Revelation 19:16, on him is written this name, King of kings and Lord of lords. Let's look how this story ends. Verse 22. Right after he said, may the king live forever, he said, my God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I done any wrong before you, your majesty. And the king was overjoyed. He gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den, and when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in God. And at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in, and they were thrown into the lion's den. Like I told you, sin is crouching at your door. These guys' fate for their envy was their own death by lions, along with their wives and their children. And before they reached the floor of the den, just to make sure you didn't think they weren't really hungry, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. They were hungry. God was just keeping their mouth shut. And King Darius wrote, and this is what's incredible. After this moment, he writes a letter to all those kingdoms that he rules, all those nations that he rules, all those people that he rules, and they've got all their gods. He says, you know what? From now on, I want you to worship this one. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves and he performs signs and wonders in the heavens on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. What's God saying to you in this story this morning? Is God kind of rattling your cage this morning saying, man, I can't remember the last time you prayed? Is God kind of rattling your cage today saying, you know what? I don't know if I would be convicted of praying. Or maybe God's sort of rattling your cage today because you're in the lion's den and you're like, why? What's going on? And he's trying to get your attention today to say, I'm the real lion. I'm the real king. I don't know what God is saying to you right now.